Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the final day of September, the 30th of September, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you go to grab the stream on your traditional computer-type device via the Listen Live button. Of course, if you're listening on some sort of mobile device, we recommend Stitcher, we recommend TuneIn Radio, we recommend Ootunes. Just with a gentle reminder with regard to Stitcher and TuneIn that if you see any ads, it's not because we ran them, okay? No, welcome to the closeout of the month of September and the beginning of the anniversary month for the little radio network that could and did and has. This is entirely a listener-supported effort, and it is an inspiring one. We have gotten ourselves out of a rather desperate hole. We've gotten a ton of freaking bills paid. And we are moving forward boldly and proudly into our ninth anniversary month. And I want to start the program. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I want to start the program by sending out thanks, profound thanks, to both Chris and to Laborman, otherwise known as Gary, our buddy, the two of whom have now gotten us within striking distance of the stated goal of upgrading some of the telephony here so that we can bring folks back into the conversation who have been unable to participate via the Skype line. Because, well, if you've heard Bill talk about it, or Kevin, or any of a number of other individuals, apparently assistive technology for computers is not so hot when it comes to things like Skype for people who are visually impaired. So we just need a plain old access to the program by telephone kind of thingy. And we can do that, and we are now only about $300 away from being able to pull off that goal, thanks to, as noted previously, our buddy Gary, Laborman, and thanks also to Chris and to Ed, and thanks to Darcy, and from last night to Sal and Jenny and Jay Cruzen and Twisted and Michael. We'll be able to get that ball rolling in short order, I hope. And I think that is a worthy goal, don't you? And if you want to help out in that regard, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y-W-V, 25801. And just remember to make any check or money order payable to The Horn or Head On Communications, something like that, so that Boss Man Wayne can deal with it and don't make it to Bob Kincaid, because that's just, well, Boss Man Wayne deals with those things. I don't. And if you'll let me know that you're sending something mailboxward, well, we will get that. I'll get a message over to Boss Man Wayne so he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck. So that is how all that works. And in point of fact, if folks would match what Chris and Gary have done, I could order the gizmos tomorrow. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on TuneIn this evening. Thank you very much for letting me know that, because I don't have an air monitor here. It's just the nature of the beast. Hopefully we will have some technical improvements that happen in the month of October and celebrate our birthday on the 24th with some significant upgrades. It can happen. It could. Stranger things have. That is absolutely a fact. It is, as noted, Tuesday, this final day of September. And, well, you know what Tuesdays are for here, right? Yeah, it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. You might recall that Titanic Tuesday is so noted because of the Titanic intellect that is almost always on display from the right wing in this country. The name itself comes from the 967th tier right wing babbler over in Beckley, now sadly no longer on the air and having been replaced by a national babbler, I believe, Andrea Tanteros, who herself is a Titanic intellect. But it was a caller to the 967th tier right wing radio show who asked, "Steve, how come is it that there is fossilized shellfish in the rocks here in West Virginia?" And the Titanic intellect, being Titanic indeed, responded, "Caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yeah. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic Silver Service. So that's why it's Titanic Tuesday, because you get that kind. That's what passes for intellect in the right way. And with that in mind, where to begin? Where to begin? Where, oh, where, oh, where to begin? Because there's so much Titanism, I guess. Nice little crowd beginning in the chat room. Good evening, Anatole and Carol and Jeremy and Paul and Sergi. Longtime Horn chat room moderator Sparky is riding shotgun over the whole affair. And yes, to answer a question from Carol in the chat room, is Boss Man Wayne happy to be getting the bills paid? Boss Man Wayne is ecstatic. He is thrilled to pieces. And so, a lot of times when I talk to Boss Man Wayne, he'll say, "Hey, tell him we got bills to pay here." And we do indeed. But not as many as we had before. Sunday was tough for Boss Man Wayne. Boss Man Wayne is a big Steelers fan, and it's bad enough to watch the Steelers lose a football game. To watch them lose the game the way they did on Sunday, oh my, oh my, oh my. So hopefully he'll have something to smile about come Sunday. And along the way, you know, we were talking about Carol's Ozark Mountain gift basket. We had a contribution come in and said, "We want the food porn review from you, Bob." And the contribution came along, and the contributor said, "Have Carol ship it to you." So, well, I'm going to do that. I absolutely will. And me, I'll opt for the spicy Caribbean Monterey Jack, in point of fact. Well, this is a little-known true fact. Irish Dave pointing out, you know the Titanic gravy boat sank. I heard it struck an iceberg, 9/10 of which was below the surface. Well, those icebergs are like that. I mean, after all, Iceberg, you get it? See what he did there, Irish Dave? Yeah, he's got a million of them. The hysteria is already underway. Yeah. The ISIL has done infected America with the Ebola. Only it hasn't. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention confirmed today a diagnosis of Ebola here in the United States. An unnamed patient being tested for Ebola and placed in strict isolation due to the patient's symptoms and recent travel history. This patient being treated at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital of Dallas. You can expect panic-stricken screaming in the streets any minute now. Because it's Titanic Tuesday, and you know, I'm not making light of the disease itself, but if for instance you were listening last night, you know, we had a brief mention, or we played a clip from Judge Jeanine Pirro, who said that we all need to prepare for the ISIL invasion by buying lots of guns and praying. Just got to be careful who you pray to and what you pray about. For instance, many of us, I mentioned Boss Man Wayne in the NFL a minute ago, many of us were subjected for a couple of years to what became known as a cultural phenomenon that became known as T-bowing. No, we're not going to talk sports. This is culture. You don't have to turn off the program. Tebowing was that practice whereby when he scored a touch-em down, Tim Tebow, America's best Christian, would kneel in the end zone in thanks to Almighty God for guiding him to that particular piece of real estate so that he could score touchdowns to the benefit of a billionaire NFL owner. Yeah. And Tim Tebow was only the most obvious example of that. There are any number of people who will catch a pass and get up and point to the sky and say, "You made it possible for me to catch that, my Lord and Savior. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord." But you have to be thanking Jesus. You can't just thank any deity. A Jewish NFL player couldn't go and daven at the goalpost. Oh no. No, only the right religion may make overt gestures of false piety in the course of the game. How do we know this? We know this because of what happened last night on Monday Night Football. It was a bad night to be a Patriots fan. We're still not talking about sports. Because, we liberals and progressives are far too snooty and hoity-toity and non-proletarian to ever talk about, you know, what the hoi polloi are into. I mean, we can talk about ballet, and we can talk about opera, or maybe the proper trimming of bonsai trees, all kinds of things. But we can't talk about sports because, you know, that's only the national metaphor whereby America communicates with itself. Shh, this is not a conversation about sports. So anyway, last night was a terrible night for the New England Patriots, whose offense apparently did not get on the plane from Boston and whose defense did not get off the bus in the Arrowhead Stadium parking lot. At one point in time, a safety, which for those of you who are above football, that's a defensive position in the defensive backfield. A safety by the name of Hussein Abdullah. Really? How do we know he's not an ISIL NFL player? I mean, they both got L in their names. Hussein Abdullah, a safety, scored a touchdown. Now, this is somewhat rare insofar as the offense is supposed to do the touchdown scoring, but, well, New England really wasn't up to the task last night. But we're not talking about sports, because we're above that. It was a terrible night for New England. But when a defensive back scores a touchdown, it's a pretty big deal one way or the other. But it was the fourth quarter when Tom Brady threw the ball, intending for it to be caught by a member of his team, but it was instead caught by Hussein Abdullah, who picked it off and ran it back into the end zone for a touchdown. That's what it's called in football. And when he scored the touchdown, instead of spiking the football and dancing all over the end zone, or, and more particularly, like a good Christian would do, pointing at the sky and giving credit to Christ Jesus for helping him read the telegraphing that Tom Brady was doing when he threw the pass. No, Hussein Abdullah, in the end zone, knelt down and put his head on the ground, as is the custom of Muslims. The practice itself, I think, is called the sujud, S-U-J-U-D. It's the same thing, apparently, that you do when the muezzin cries out whatever the prayer he cries out is, from the top of the minaret, or whenever it's blared out by loudspeakers or whatever And apparently one does not necessarily need to face Mecca. I personally would like to see all religious manifestations excised from sport, because they're hypocritical and they're divisive, and I really just don't. I mean, thank you, God, thank you, Allah, thank you, Sky Spook, thank you, great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, for allowing me to score a touchdown. And I realize you were so focused on me scoring that touchdown that you're letting tens of thousands of your children die of Ebola. But thank you, because this will be handy in my contract negotiations when it's renewal time. But guess what happened? Never in the history of the NFL that I'm aware of has a player who pointed to the sky or Tebowed or did an end zone dance for Jeebus had a flag thrown. But last night when Hussein Abdullah did it, the officiating crew had no problem whatsoever, and whoop, out comes the yellow hanky. he was flagged for what was called unsportsmanlike conduct, and in particular, excessive celebration, because he went to the ground. Yeah. No flag was ever thrown against Tim Tebow or any of the other strange fundamentalist Christians who inhabit the NFL. It has his brother referred to it as Abdullah-ing after based on the concept of Tebowing. So now we can't even enjoy. I mean, those of us who do, we can't even enjoy a football game without an intrusion of religion into it. Now I am not new to this issue. But the NFL addressed the issue this morning. Because the NFL already has enough problems. Oh, dear God, who's the actor who did a send-up of Roger Goodell on Saturday Night Live's premiere this past Saturday evening? Take back the night, we fight for women. What? We fight for women? Oh. Yeah. You go find it. It's funny. It's probably on Hulu or something. The NFL Vice President of Football Communications, Michael Signora, having probably gotten a hysterical phone call from Roger Goodell saying, "Good God, not again!" Immediately made an announcement that, in the tweet, Abdullah should not have been penalized. Officiating mechanic is not to flag player who goes to ground for religious reasons. Oh, please. So what we have is a rule that says, excessive celebration and celebration generally it can be considered unsportsmanlike. It's not unsportsmanlike to rub your opponent's noses in it if you're doing it because you love your invisible friend. Consider, and I'm just putting this out there. As a proposed idea for a rule. What if we had a rule in the NFL that said no excessive celebration? No, screw that. What if we had a rule in the NFL that said no manifestations of bullshit religious piety? With a caveat and an addendum and a subparagraph and a subsubparagraph that says all manifestations of religious piety on the playing field shall be considered bullshit religious piety. Because any god that's watching football while thousands of people are dying all over the planet and being bombed and having their heads cut off and bleeding at every orifice from Ebola ain't much of a deity anyway. So they've backtracked, but it calls into question the fact that if you are anything but evangelical Christian or perhaps Roman Catholic, you get treated differently in this country. God knows if you're Muslim. I mean, can you imagine a Jewish NFL player running over to the goalpost and just continuously kabonk, 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 kabonking his head against the goalpost, davening in prayer? Can you? And it was the Kansas City Chiefs. Can you imagine the KC fans? Carol's expertise might be welcome on this. The Kansas City Chiefs, well, I mean, that general area, I know, has Muslim Americans because Muslim Americans are all over America. But can't you see the I don't know, maybe there was one of the folks from out in the Missouri hinterlands, of, and I mean, it gets real evangelical real fast out. Marveline, what in the wide, wide world of sports is that feller doing in the end zone there?
Well, he's bowing to his God, honey.
Well, what God is that? I don't know. No Christian has to do that.
Well, honey, he's not Christian.
Well, what the hell's he doing in the NFL then? Daggummit, I didn't come here and spend $100 on brats and propane and sat out in the parking lot and burned them to a crispy crunch and got myself all liquored up before I come into the stadium to watch no praying in no end zone. Well, there we were, just a stomping the daylights out of the New England Patriots, and now he done took all the fun out of it for me with him and his heathen god. Why can't we just go back to Tebowing?
Right-wing hissy on Fox News in 3, 2, 1.
Who will it, you want to take odds? Who will it be? Andrea Tantaros, Greg Gutfield, Bob Bollocks, or whatever his name is that says that the female pilots can't park their jets and that they constitute boobs on the ground? Which one's it going to be? How many, how many right-wing posts will appear at websites like that, that website that rhymes with the words slight fart, decrying the Muslimization of an American pastime? It's probably already out there, and I just didn't find it yet. Now, this is seemingly obvious. Obviously, this is probably, this seems trivial. But as is so often the case, it is not. Because the right-wing hysteria over anybody's religion except that individual's, because every evangelical or fundamentalist or religious Christian zealot in this country is convinced that their version is the only version, it's the true version, and it's the version worth roasting the world over. Come, Lord Jesus. Here's a hanky. You see how this is just going to play. A note coming in from my buddy Luda. Subject line, TD. Just imagine if he worshipped Zoroastra. Actually, he would be worshipping Ahura Mazda. Zoroastrianism is the worship of Ahura Mazda, the wise lord, as handed down by Zoroaster, their prophet. Yeah, would he have to build a bonfire in the end zone or something? No, you want to see it get real interesting in the NFL real quick. Just let some running back who's a follower of Witzel Poachley go barreling into the end zone. Whips out that obsidian knife and over the back and holds up somebody's beating heart.
and the NFL will once again issue a statement that he should not have been penalized for unsportsmanlike conduct because we have a clear exception for cutting the beating hearts out of other players' body as long as it is being done as a function of religious piety. Jenny's in the spirit of the moment. Who's the team that God loves best? PACKERS. It's Titanic Tuesday. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, let's see. Tim Tebow, RG3, Russell Wilson. They can point at the sky or kneel on the ground or roll around on the turf and speak in tongues and juggle serpents. The NFL won't bat an eyelash and neither will the rest of America. In point of fact, this brings me to something that I noticed this past Sunday. I saw some feature about Philip Rivers, quarterback of the San Diego Chargers. And see, just like this is a direct mirror image of the proselytization function of the military. See, the reason you wind up with the Tebows and the Russell Wilsons and the RG3s and the Philip Riverses out there being all pious about their faith, the reason you wind up with this is because there are organizations that go all the way down to the Pee Wee leagues that turn sport into religious events. In the case of football, I think particularly of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Nasty gang of fundies. And in point of fact, I mean, I about had a low rent hissy on Sunday because I saw this footage of Philip Rivers, who and it was all about how Philip Rivers is so freaking awesome. This, you know, it's the fluff that passes for sports reporting. Because you know you don't want to report too tough on sports, or you won't get that multi-billion-dollar contract to show the games on TV. Right? Yeah. Witness what was done to the editor of ESPN's Grantland for daring to suggest that Roger Goodell is probably something less than truthful. When he claims that he never seen none of that there video of Ray Rice knocking the snot out of his soon to be wife, but never saw it. Who? I had no idea. Never mind that there have been ungodly numbers of incidents of violence against women among NFL players. That was the first Roger Goodell had ever heard of any of that. But anyway, Philip Rivers in this piece was being glorified, lauded, whatever, for what a magnificent job he's done here in these first few weeks of the young season in quarterbacking. The Chargers thus far. And in the midst of this, there's footage of him standing up, and he's wearing a T-shirt, a plain T-shirt, with two words which I recognized as being Latin. And I thought, uh-oh. And the two words were nunc coepit, or nunc coepi. C-O-E-P-I or C-O-E-P-I-T, I can't remember. And I wasn't raised with the Vulgate Bible, so I didn't. So I looked it up. I thought, you know, because remember how Tebow was famous for putting Bible verses written in white on the eye black underneath his eyes. I thought, must be from a Bible verse. No, hell no, it wasn't. It's worse. It means now I begin. Meaning now. Okay, well, where the heck did that come from? Dig, 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 Google, 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 dogpile, dogpile. And there it was. Now I begin, which has become the de facto unofficial motto of the San Diego Chargers, comes from the writings of Jose Maria Escriva, who is actually, thanks to the fascist-minded Pope John Paul II, who is well on the way to his own sainthood. Look! That nun's hangnail got all better because she prayed to John Paul II. He's a saint. Jose Maria Escriva is Saint Jose Maria Escriva. Now, who the hell is that, Bob? Jose Maria Escriva was a Roman Catholic priest from Spain. And he was a Roman Catholic priest from Spain during the time from the Spanish Civil War forward, when fascism rose to prominence in that country. Remember, Spain was the proving ground for the relative war machines of the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany in the run-up to the Second World War. The Germans supported the royalist fascists, and the Soviets supported the Republicans, not like our Republicans. And Jose Maria Escriva supported the fascists time after time after time. And Jose Maria Escriva became a saint because he went on to found this really... Now, this is not about football. See? Jose Maria Escriva went on to found this really, 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 I mean really, creepy order of super right-wing proto-fascist Catholicism called... Everybody? Anybody? Who knows the answer? No, no little Johnny jokes. Who knows the answer? Wrecked him. Damn near killed him. Opus Dei, which means work of God. Opus Dei, then, are a bunch of lay weirdos. Not lay like that. Quit it, pervs. In the chat room moderator Lottie got it first, Opus Dei. Opus Dei has a lot of adherents, and it is posited on this idea that people are supposed to be holy and sacred in their ordinary day-to-day lives. Sounds okay, right? As usual, the devil is in the details. There's lots of details and lots of devil. Opus Dei Roman Catholics have become known over the years for the mortification of the flesh. They like to wear little pieces of barbed wire around their legs. They like to beat themselves. Cause, you know, they self-flagellate. I said flagellate. They self-scourge so that they can suffer like Jesus done did. They wear hair shirts and shit like that. Like I said, weirdos. And they have retreats. Or, you know, places where people go to be better Opus Deis for a while. And therein the men can sit and study Scripture. And the women, their job on earth is to clean up after the menfolk. Not kidding. So, one wonders, since Philip Rivers has been, and you know, the NFL has really, really tight rules, I mean, about, you know, how high your socks have to be, and you've always got to have your jersey tucked in, and all kinds of stuff. But apparently they don't have any rules about a quarterback taking over his team and enforcing a right-wing fascist Spaniard priest's philosophy on the team. See, I told you. Thank you, Cindy. Cindy in the Great Northwest. Self-flagellate? Are you sure it ain't self-fillate? Not for want of trying, I'll bet. Now, if you did that, then you'd have to wear two pieces of barbed wire. I mean, for instance, you want to know how nasty Opus Dei is? It has been reported that, you know, birds of a feather, Fat Tony Antonin Scalia, the S in rats, the rats on the Supreme Court, is a member of Opus Dei. And, of course, his daddy was the head of the Mussolini fan club or whatever in the United States prior to World War II. Huh, that's interesting. Carol noting in the chat room, there's an Opus Dei priest in the next town over. The Catholic community is going apeshit. And I think Lottie pointing out at the same time that Scalia is Opus Dei. I think maybe Slappy Thomas is Opus Dei too. Yeah. So anyway, the NFL, which has ever so many rules about how players must conduct themselves, how they wear their shirts, how they wear their shoes, what they can and cannot. Right. Remember when they fined, what was his name, for whipping out a Sharpie and signing a ball or something after he scored a touchdown? Yeah, Marty asking the question. I think Alito, the A in rats, is probably Opus Dei, too. Roberts? Don't know. Anybody want to do any research on this? Yeah, Lottie's got it. Yeah, Scalia converted Slappy. Fat Tony converted Slappy to Opus Dei Roman Catholicism. So here's a question for the NFL, since the NFL hasn't done anything about the proselytization of the San Diego Chargers based upon the fascist writings of a fascist priest under a fascist regime. I mean, this is a guy who, during his beatification process, one person tried to stop that thing in its tracks by pointing out that once upon a time, proposed Saint Jose Maria Escriva said, you know, that Hitler guy, it couldn't have been, he's not such a bad guy, there's no way he could have killed 6 million people. Yeah. And so Philip Rivers, who is apparently most impressed with all of that, has grafted that onto the San Diego Chargers and not a peep from the NFL, and instead puff pieces about how wonderful he is. So what do you reckon would happen now? And eventually it will. Eventually it will. And it'll be nasty. What would happen if, for instance, Hussein Abdullah became sort of the natural spiritual leader of the Kansas City Chiefs and had T-shirts made up for all of the players on the Chiefs that said Allahu Akbar? God is great. I mean, if we can graft a Latin phrase from a fascist onto a football team, why can't we graft an Arabic phrase from Islam onto a football team? Oh, but Jesus, no, we could never do that, right? It would almost be worth it, wouldn't it, just to stand outside and listen for the sound of Brian Fisher of the American Family Association, Tupelo, Mississippi, just to hear his little old head going inside the glass bulb that he has to wear over his head when he's not on the air, you know, just like Mars Attacks. Yeah. See, Carol in the chat room. The shit would hit the redneck fan. And that's just the tip of the Titanic Tuesday iceberg. We have more. Oh, yeah. So much more. So there was a hearing today on Capitol Hill. About the fact that an intruder had gone so far past White House security that he went walkabout inside the White House, and another one had managed to shoot into the White House, and lodged a bullet in the ceiling while the Secret Service was saying, no, that's just a backfiring car. And so today they called Secret Service Director Julia Pearson. To the Capitol. To a House committee investigating the incident. It was run by, and remember, this is the House of Representatives, so it means that the hearing was being run by the birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger-eaten, libertarian, John Bircher, Repiglick, and majority. And in point of fact, the committee hearing was run by House Oversight Committee Chairman Daryl Issa. Unindicted co-conspirator Daryl Issa. And he was in high dudgeon. Not low dudgeon, but high dudgeon. Julia Pearson said she was deeply upset that it had happened and said it will never happen again. But I find the idea of Daryl Issa or any Republican being upset about this to be, what's the word I'm looking for, laughable. Because in point of fact, if something happened to President Obama, there's nobody within earshot of this program. There's nobody in the Horn Family Commune congregation who doubts that Daryl Issa and John Boehner and Steve Cantaloupes King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Michelle Bachman and Marsha Blackburn and all the other booger-eating weirdos would be out dancing on the Capitol lawn. And some of the more fundamentalist members of the House, maybe Steve Stockton, would note all them imprecatory prayers that had been going up to the Almighty to save us from that anti-colonialist, secret Kenyan, Muslim with the deep-seated hatred of white people. If the Repiglickans were concerned at all about White House security, it's because they think that maybe by, say, January 20th, 2017, they'll have some right-wing freak living in the building, and then it would matter. No mention that I'm aware of during the hearing today that this president is the single, is the recipient of the single highest number of threats against his life in the history of the presidency. Daryl Issa said, the White House is supposed to be one of America's most secure facilities. How on earth did this happen?
Gee, I don't know how this could possibly happen.
Being as how the Secret Service members got busted a few years ago for sending racist jokes about the president. Being as how the Secret Service assigned him a code name that comes from the title of a song about a lynching. I don't know. How about you? Any ideas? And then it come time for Jason Chaffetz, who's a member of the House of Representatives from Utah, and we know what his political party is. He said, Julia Pearson, I want it to be crystal clear. You make a run and a dash at the White House, we're going to take you down. I want overwhelming force. Do you disagree with me? There have been 16 fence jumpers in the last 5 years at the White House, 6 of them this year alone. Mm-hmm. In this particular instance, the guy who got all the way into the White House was an Iraq War veteran. Yeah. And he's up on federal charges, of course. And, of course, his name was Omar Gonzalez. Man, that's both, I mean, he's probably one of the Mexican Muslims. Probably a member of ISIL. No, he did his tour in Iraq. No word on the degree to which he is or is not in full possession of his faculties. Remember me mentioning a night or so ago, was it last night, about the fact that a prosecutor who wants an indictment gets an indictment? This happened not long ago at all, and he's already been indicted by a grand jury in Virginia. I'm sorry, in D.C. The reason I mentioned Virginia is he's got previous problems in Virginia. It was July when he was arrested in the Commonwealth for charges of reckless driving, eluding police, and possessing a sawed-off shotgun. Then in August, he was taking a stroll outside the White House fence along the south side with a hatchet tucked into the waistband of his pants. When hatchets are outlawed, only outlaws will have hatchets, you know that. Meanwhile, it's worth noting, and I think it was noted today, yes, Julia Pearson, the head of the Secret Service, said that the Secret Service is down by about 550 staffers from what is deemed to be the optimum number to have if one wants to have an effective and competent Secret Service. That must be one crappy job, Secret Service, to have 550 people just say, screw it, I quit. Everybody whistling a chorus of Johnny Paychecks, take this job and shove it, and marching out of the building. 550 people just quit. Can't stand it no more. Let me up. I've had enough. That all I can stand. Right? Yeah. No. 550 Secret Service personnel did not just look up one day and say, man, it ain't worth it. I ain't taking it anymore. I ain't gonna sit here and work in the Secret Service protecting that one who's trying to destroy our country when we're out here trying to take our country back. Mm-mm. That's 550 members of the Secret Service who were laid off, let go, cashiered, canned, what have you, because of anybody? The sequester? Because of the budget cuts? In other words, because of the actions of the repig-licking House of Representatives, who insisted upon shutting down the government instead of doing the business of governing. I don't think we could say accurately that the White House is being protected by a skeleton crew of Secret Service personnel. But still, if you've got human resources and person power issues, and you're trying to shuffle around and make up for the absence of 550 people who are supposed to be there but aren't there because a bunch of godforsaken teabaggers are running the Congress, well, you're going to have a problem. If that's also happening at the same time that there is an entire right-wing media structure that is hooting and hollering and squealing and screaming about socialism and Kenyan Muslim fascism and that one, and a flag is falling, and oh my God, I don't know, deficits, you're gonna have a problem. See, that's why a year ago when the Repiglickens were shutting down the government, I referred to it as an insurgency, because it is one. These are the real-time, real-world effects of what happens when you've got low-information, low-IQ Americans walking around in Lipton's festoon tricorn hats, hollering about how they got to take our country back, and Merca, and my particular favorite in this instance, we're Republicans, we're conservatives, we want small government. How small, dipstick? 550 fewer Secret Service operatives, is that small enough for you? Actually, no. The 9 most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. Oddly enough, Ronnie didn't think those were such dangerous words after, what's-his-face? Pumped a couple of rounds into him, and some Secret Service personnel ran up and said, Mr. President, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help! But that one, in our White House? Oh no! He gets his Secret Service staff cut by 550 human beings! And then of course, there's the right-wing response to the Secret Service scandal. You know where we have to go for this, right? Of course you do. We have to go over to the clearinghouse of all things Wingnut. I mean by that Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. And that trio of people who every morning prove that Fox and MSNBC are not the same thing. While MSNBC is turning over its most prime hunk of drive-time real estate to a right-wing congressman, Fox has Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade and Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who, with all three of their IQs added up, couldn't reach the level of the mentation of a half-drowned frog. And they, of course, were in conversation with a person who holds herself out as a human being by the name of Laura Ingraham. And Laura Ingraham is a self-hating female, as the saying goes. No mention from Laura Ingraham about 550 too few Secret Service personnel. No. The reason the Secret Service is having a hard time protecting the president, it's not because he's the most threatened president in the world, in the history of the presidency. It's not because of 16 fence climbers and fence jumpers in the last few years. Has nothing to do with any of that. It's all about the vaginas.
Had this guy known where he was running in the White House, he could have run right up the stairs because he ran right past him.
Yeah, I used to work in the White House, and all I can say is, as I recall it, and this is back in the last couple of years of the Reagan administration, the people at the front door were usually fairly large, mm-hmm. strong individuals, okay? I mean, it's a little blurry memory, but the idea that this guy could get in and then overpower an agent who I guess was female. I mean, there were a lot of female agents who were really strong and large. Sure. But, I mean, you do get the sense at some point that political correctness could have been a factor here, right? Because this the new female director who's going to be questioned today, Julia Pearson, came in after that Columbia prostitute scandal, the Secret Service, and she's going to face tough questions. She was a proud career civil servant, 30 years with the Secret Service. But you do get the sense with this administration that all these decisions about who gets what position and where they're stationed, political correctness comes into the decision-making, right. And this is no place for political correctness.
You get the sense, she says. That's Fox News TV Radio Rwanda code for that's what all the shrieking voices muddled around inside the thin gray settlings that surround my great big lizard brain and pass for brains inside my thin, thin skull are screaming at me. Because there's no evidence otherwise of that being factual. Oh, it's political. Where are the big burly men? Où sont les big burly men d'antan? F me.
The strongest, right. Biggest, best people have to be at the front of the White House.
Do you remember after Newtown and the Sandy Hook massacre when some wingnut said that, them children would probably be alive today, but we've feminized the school systems? Why wasn't that shooter took down by a male janitor and some 12-year-old sixth-grade boys, huh? This is that, again.
door. Just lock the damn door.
I don't even think you have to lock. I'm actually against locking the door. I don't think you have to lock the door.
Okay.
We never locked the door, but we never had a situation like
but
this.
They also
and
have
we
an
had
alarm.
Pennsylvania Avenue open.
They
okay.
had an alarm system that the usher disabled, muffled, because they didn't like the sound. How does that happen?
Aren't you guys half surprised that Omar Gonzalez didn't go up to the White House mess and, like, have lunch? I mean... or go down to the White House mess and have lunch. I mean, come on. I mean, where else could he have gone? I mean, I'm surprised he didn't take the dog out for a walk, you know, Bo. I mean, he's unbelievable.
You know, it's the biggest surprise.
You know, because those Kenyan Muslims, they'll just let any old body come along and take your dog for a walk.
Seems to be the word of the day here. Everyone is taken by surprise, the fact that ISIS has just been taking over in the Middle East, you know, especially the president. 60 Minutes was...
Wait a minute. Did you hear what just happened? Because I heard what just happened. Laura Ingraham says Omar Gonzalez, and the next thing you know, Elizabeth Hasselbeck is talking about ISIS. Can you imagine what Emery and Eileen... and Clyde and Marvelline must go through every morning sitting there in the Barca lounger trying to have their morning decaf with this stuff going on. What? Omar Gonzalez was a member of ISIS, Marvelline. I'll be goddamn, Clyde. Marvelline, watch your mouth.
With the place he decided to go and say that I'm going to throw my intel right under the bus and say that they were underestimating how powerful this situation could be, really just tossing blame on them and then saying, wait a minute, now we're all surprised. Even ISIS is surprised at their own success.
I don't need to tell you that this will not be followed by the clip of George W. Bush saying that that the United States intelligence apparatus got all the intel wrong about all those weapons of mass destruction. That ain't gonna roll. You didn't think it was, did you?
Perhaps because the president missed nearly half of his daily intelligence briefings. Whoa. Can you be surprised if you've missed over half of your intel meetings?
Well, Elizabeth, I wonder how many fundraisers he's missed over the past year. I mean, 50%? I bet not.
No.
Come on, come on. Call him shiftless, Laura. Call him uppity. You know you can do it. You know you want to. Twit.
Golf games, probably not. I mean, I'm afraid to be snarky here, but come on. I mean,
oh, you don't mean to be?
You got to read your intelligence briefings. You have to at least...
No, she didn't. She didn't. She couldn't possibly have just said you have to read your intelligence briefings. I'm going to find my... Now, letting go now. Letting go now. Letting everything go. Breathing in. Breathing out. Blowing all the stupid right out of my world. Because I just know that I did not hear one of the chief cheerleaders... for George W. Bush, say, you have to read your daily briefings. I just know she didn't do that. I just know that nobody who had cheerled for George W. Bush would say you have to read your daily briefings. Because after all, had he read the August 6th, 2001 briefing that said that was entitled, curiously, Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S., maybe 3,000 people wouldn't be dead. It's not working. Still not working. Damn it! No, she did. Oh, yeah, she did. Because their figure, you know, over there, the programming and content side of and the writing side of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda figures that Emery and Emery and Eileen and Clyde and Marvelline have long since forgotten about September 11, 2001. All they remember about George W. Bush is he kept us safe. Son of a gun! See, this is another moment
Another of those moments when I know there ain't no supernatural beings, especially none with a vengeful streak. Because the minute she said, you got to read your presidential daily briefings, just lightning bolt. Little puff of smoke where Laura Ingraham used to be. Bzzzt. And a big booming voice out of the sky saying, stop that. No. Oh, God.
Give the appearance that you're engaged in understanding the security threats.
You mean like cut and brush? Was that the appearance of being engaged, Laura? You freak.
Our country, but as we've discussed before, I think this president was never all that into foreign policy or that into military strategy. He was really most motivated by remaking America on the home front. So he's really
into socialism. Because see, that's dog whistling there. Remaking America. Just if you have that great big amygdala. And the thin gray settlings inside your head, because that's what your brains have been reduced to because you've been watching Fox for 20 years now. When you hear remaking America, your brain automatically fills in into socialism. Fascist socialism. See how it works?
Really motivated about stuff like, you know, the war on women and contraceptive mandate.
Sure.
and remaking the military, you know, diversity, global warming. I mean,
yeah, because these are all things that don't matter. That's the message that goes with this. Diversity doesn't matter. War on women doesn't matter. Global warming doesn't matter because, you know, of course, it's not real. Yep. If only we'd had some big burly men instead of those vagina people in the White House, by God, that guy wouldn't have gotten in there. Because St. Ronnie of Raygun, he knowed better. Nope. Another day that I forgot the tequila. Another day I forgot to wash the swirly straw. Damn. That's right, Stockton Larry. Them ISIS can hide in the brush. This is, you know, and remind me. Do you know how Omar Gonzalez had all those law enforcement run-ins and nobody thought it was worth mentioning? Or, you know, you've got a factor in here, and this is pure speculation. Maybe some people realized that he was dangerous and thought, good! You just never know. So I have filibustered 15 minutes into the second hour of the program. This is, after all, Conversation Radio, and I welcome and encourage your participation. I hope you'll avail yourself of that if you want to. Skype to Skype is just Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And via a traditional phone, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Either one of those gets you into the conversation. I encourage you to participate. And remember, thanks to the last 2 days of fundraising, we're well on the way to expanding our telephonic presence and we need to raise about $300 to do that. Thank you. Thank you to Sal for getting out front on that idea here during the live portion of the program. Chris and Gary having gotten us off to a rousing start earlier. Yeah, okay, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Marty. That was Terrell Owens. So, it being Tuesday, the Green News Report is coming up. We will take a brief break and come back to what hopefully will be your calls on this here Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Tuesday, September 30, 2014.
Human beings, just as we are having a profound impact on the atmosphere, we are having a profound impact on the oceans.
Good news. Obama creates the world's largest marine sanctuary. Bad news. Humans have wiped out half of the world's wildlife. Scientists find humans to blame in Australia's hottest year in history. Plus...
And so we should not be aligned with such people. They're just literally lying.
A major oil company joins Google in breaking up with climate-denying front group.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Have all the climatologists whose career depends on the climate changing to keep themselves publishing articles. Yes, I could read that, but I don't believe it.
I do not believe the scientists because it is their profession, not their hobby.
And that's the climate denial movement in a nutshell. Emphasis on nut. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you tease us with some good news, and then you hit us in the head with some horrible news, as usual.
Yeah, sorry about that, but really, it's the truth. Humans have wiped out half the world's wildlife population since 1970.
We are cutting trees faster than they can regrow. We are catching fish faster than they can reproduce. We're emitting more CO2 than oceans and forests can absorb.
That's Marco Lambertini, Director General of the World Wildlife Fund, on the shocking conclusion from researchers in the Living Planet Index, a long-term study that tracks more than 3,000 species of mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, and fish. Researchers estimate that since 1970, the overall population of animals around the world has plunged 52%. The biggest factors, human destruction of habitat and human exploitation, unsustainable rates of fishing and hunting that are depleting species faster than they can reproduce. But, you know, there is some good news. The study does say that some designated wildlife sanctuaries are actually succeeding in at least slowing down this shocking decline. And that's why it was welcome news when President Obama used his legal authority last week to expand an existing U.S. Pacific Ocean Marine Reserve, safeguarding nearly a 500,000 square miles of pristine ocean habitat. It's now the world's largest fully protected marine reserve in the Pacific, according to Secretary of State John Kerry.
We're talking about an area of ocean that's nearly twice the size of Texas, and that will be protected in perpetuity from commercial fishing and other resource extraction activities like deep water mining.
Well, as much as we've been happy to criticize Barack Obama and John Kerry lately, that is good news indeed.
Yeah, and there is some more good news. New studies showing that aggressive fisheries management works if it's enacted in time. Since 2000, new congressional legislation to halt overfishing in U.S. waters has succeeded in restoring 36 U.S. fish populations from the brink of extinction, including California blue whales and Gulf red snapper. Not so great news. Australia's hottest year on record was fueled by man-made global warming, along with at least 9 extreme weather events around the world in 2013. That's according to a suite of new studies published in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. 5 research teams independently concluded that man-made global warming contributed to or amplified several extreme weather events around the world, including 5 deadly extreme heat waves. It was less clear on floods and deluges, but notably, the researchers did not rule out the role of man-made global warming in those other extreme weather events. They just said they couldn't confirm it with existing scientific methods.
And we've heard some people reporting that scientists have ruled out human-caused climate change as having anything to do with those events. These reports said they were unable to yet find hard evidence. That's different than ruling them out.
Exactly. Finally, Google is denying climate change deniers. On the Diane Rehm radio show, Google CEO Eric Schmidt announced Google is dumping its membership in the right-wing policy organization ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, because it pushes climate change denial.
Everyone understands climate change is occurring, and the people who oppose it are really hurting our children and our grandchildren and making the world a much worse place. And so we should not be aligned with such people. They're just literally lying.
Well, what took you so long, Google CEO Eric Schmidt? You could have at least Googled these guys before you gave them tens of thousands of dollars, no?
But the capper, that awkward moment when your climate change denial is too radical even for an oil company. Oil major Occidental Petroleum has announced it is also severing ties with ALEC because it doesn't want to be associated with ALEC's denial of man-made global warming.
Good news. And it should also be noted, by the way, it was a caller on the Diane Rehm show who asked Google CEO Eric Schmidt about that and pushed them to make that announcement. So if you're listening out there, keep making noise. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. You can find us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Breaking up is hard to lose. Don't take your love away from me. Don't you leave my heart in misery. If you go, then I'll be blue.
And there you have the Green News Report for this 30th day of September 2014. Thanks, as always, to Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen for putting together a heck of a fine piece of reportage every Tuesday and Thursday evening. This is The Horn. It's Titanic Tuesday. I'm Bob Kincaid, and just a reminder, as we go through the second hour and head toward the third, almost at the halfway point of the program, and I'm going to the phones momentarily. Phone, singular. Soon, however, it may be phones. Based on the little fundraising thing we're doing right now, thanks to Tom for getting us started and to a host of folks for carrying that forward. And thanks to Chris and Gary Laborman and to Sal for taking it forward this evening. We've got, about 200, 250 to go. And we can expand the telephony of the program here, which would be really, really cool. I know a number of people would be thrilled by that. And hopefully a couple of improvements along the way through the course of the anniversary month of October. Let's do go to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing good because you this talk about the guy breaking into the White House. Now, either you or somebody should be able to Google a story from 50 or 51 when a group of men who were, they were identified to the, by the radio to the public. They were identified as nationalists from the island of Puerto Rico.
Yep.
Who wanted Puerto Rican freedom, you know. Of all things, my God, how about that? And there was a big shootout down there. One of the White House cops got killed, or one of the other. I think it was both in the Senate and in the White House. There was gunfire. So if somebody can Google that one up for you and give you the story, maybe you can give it to us sometime tonight. Are you still there?
Still right here.
Oh, okay. Because I'm having trouble hearing you. But anyway, that, I don't know, do you remember that story at all? Have you ever heard that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You see, they don't mention stuff like that on the news. It didn't happen within the last 24 hours, so it's not part of this news cycle. But this isn't the first time that, and we don't know what, how, you want a psych test on this guy. He may be a half a bubble or more off, even temporarily, you know? Because was he armed when they captured him?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But of course, it never should have happened.
But he had been running. But he had been running around previously with a sawed-off shotgun, and taking leisurely strolls down the south fence of the White House with a hatchet in his belt.
Yeah. See, at that point, there should be a pick up and analyze, you know, a little psych ward action on the guy, you know.
Right.
Or check him if
he's an Iraq war vet. Now, that is not, I'm not implying that everybody who went to Iraq has some form of mental illness coming out of it, but a lot do. And if you are an Iraq war vet who has been caught walking down the south fence of the White House with a hatchet tucked in your waistband, then I think an eval is probably in order. But then again, Bill, there's the larger issue of when they caught him walking down the south fence of the White House with a hatchet in his belt, why didn't they say, hey, buddy, and, you know, call the guys with the, and go and, you know, let's look at some ink blots for a little while.
Yeah, let's check him out quietly and talk to him. And because, quite honestly, if he was carrying a shotgun openly like that around the White House, I mean, you have to go back to the fact that Mr. Lincoln, don't go to see the play. You know the old joke, the old sick line that I heard when I was a kid. And let's see, McKinley and Garfield, one of them was a guy who was looking for some kind of office seeker.
Yeah, that was Garfield.
Yeah.
And by the way, the attack that you were talking about on Truman, that was at Blair House, not at the White House.
Yeah, Blair. Okay. Yeah, because was the White House being redone or something?
I'm not sure, but Robert in Morgantown just cleared that up, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, but there was no mention of that ever happening, and that kind of gets you. And you know, you talk about the other thing you talked about tonight, the religion angle with sports. You got to play football for what we call CYO, Catholic youth. You know, like parochial grade schools, because it was good for kids to go out and play. Plus, it was a good breeding ground for kids that would later play high school ball, you know. As I told you, Chuck Noll played at Bennington High School in Cleveland and Dayton Flyers, and then he was with the Browns for years as a linebacker and as a offensive guard. And carrying those plays in for Uncle Paul, you know, that gives you that real, if your brains are cranking, you got to be picking up stuff, you know. When your plays are being sent in and you observe the situation, and I think Mr. Noll became a pretty damn good coach, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll make room for somebody else. When he talks about that, I say, yeah, that's nobody mentioned that this situation took place. Is there something, Bob, what year was that?
Let's see. Here's another one. November 1st, 1950, they attacked police and Secret Service to gain access to Blair House in Washington, D.C., where Truman was staying during major renovations of the White House. Yeah, thanks to Sparky for that. But the larger point here is that, yes, there have always been, to a certain extent, threats upon the presidency. I mean, Lincoln had to sneak into Washington, D.C., and the father of the Secret Service was also the father of union-busting thuggery, a man by the name of Pinkerton, Alan Pinkerton.
Yeah, you got it.
But there have always been people who, I mean, you can go back to, who was it, it was either John Quincy Adams or Martin Van Buren, who had a habit of taking a naked dip in the Potomac every day, and a woman, and in this case it turned out good, a woman named Ann Royal, and our good friend Jeff Biggers is working on a biography of hers. A woman named Ann Royal simply gathered up his clothing and said, "Well, you can walk back to the White House naked, Mr. President, unless you agree to support the newfangled telegraph and get a little federal money toward its development." And he said, "Absolutely, lady, give me back my drawers."
I love a good practical joke, you know. That'll work for you. And it's about as harmless as you can get. But that situation was, something nobody ever, I thought, did I really hear that? Because it was so long ago, and I was approaching my 8th birthday rapidly at that point, November. Yeah, I was 2 months shy of being 8 years old. But it's funny how my mother, the radio was always on in the house. The television didn't come on until the evening hours. And as I said, one of my favorite live TV shows was a detective show. They had a camera focusing on a corpse, and they were supposed to cut to a commercial. And the cameraman didn't cut you, so you got a chance to watch the corpse get up and walk off the set, you know?
Beautiful.
Oh, my God, resurrection. Oh, my, I couldn't believe it.
It's a miracle.
Anyway, take care and hope. What?
It's a miracle.
A miracle, yeah. That's about the only way you're going to see that one, buddy. I mean, well, I've been dead drunk a few times. Does that count? I don't know. Anyway, take care of yourself and hang in there.
All right. Thanks, Bill. You too. We'll talk soon. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland in rare form this evening. So until we add a line, and until then that happens, you know, when we finish off the funding issue on this that has been started by Tom and Michael and Chris and Gary and a host of others. Until that happens, when you hear one line go down, you can call in. You know, when you hear one hang up, that means the line's open for you to call, because we don't have any way of putting anybody on hold. There is another story out there. No, it's not about the Secret Service. It actually comes out of Charlottesville, Virginia, and it's about the man who is thought to have abducted a young woman there. And I don't know if you've noticed this story or not, but there are, within that particular story, some disturbing little nuggets of the war on women. In this particular case, the young woman was a student at the University of Virginia, Hannah Graham. And Jesse Leroy Matthew Jr. has been charged. They caught up with him in Texas, has been charged with abducting Hannah Graham. It now turns out that police think that he may also be connected to an unsolved murder in 2009 of 20-year-old Morgan Harrington, a woman whose body was found in a hayfield 3 months after she disappeared from a Metallica concert in Charlottesville. The FBI also claimed that Harrington's killer was responsible for a 2005 rape in Northern Virginia. This is a most disturbing unfolding of events. But the part that got me thinking was the fact that this individual had been reported when he was a student at Liberty University, Jerry Falwell U. He was accused of a sexual assault. At Jerry Falwell U, they took no action because they said it was a case of he said, she said. That she said it was rape, but he said it was consensual sex. So the upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians at Jerry Falwell U naturally took the side of the guy who said, "No, I didn't rape her. She wanted it." Do you remember the story from a few months back of the woman who was raped at Bob Jones University down in South Carolina, Stan? And her story of how she was counseled by the upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians down there to forgive her rapist and move on, and how her life was turned into absolute wreckage as a result. We have a problem in this country. We have a problem understanding rape. And that problem seems to be particularly bad inside Christianity. Christianity understands perfectly well why it is that a wide receiver would spin the ball in the end zone and point at the sky. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. You know, with that finger pointing up, kind of like Andy Kaufman doing the Mighty Mouse song. But can't understand why it is that women feel like they've got a right not to be raped. One woman who lived in the in an apartment in the same complex as Jesse Leroy Matthews said, it's scary for any woman to be out there. And you know what? It is. With this caveat. Out there is everywhere. Meanwhile, there's a little bit of damage control going on there in the home of Mr. Jefferson's university. Cora Kessler quoted in an Associated Press story, 21 years old, she says, I don't want people to get the idea that Charlottesville is just full of serial killers. But that's the problem. A town doesn't have to be full of serial killers. One is plenty. And it is made worse when people in authority side with rapists instead of rape victims. America, right? Yeah. 17 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. If you want to involve yourself in the conversation, you are more than mightily welcome to jump in. 304-574-8178 is the number, or Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes?
Diane in Kansastan.
Hey, Diane, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Bob. Thank you. I just got home from a university environment to tune in and hear what you're talking about that's happening on university environments. And I have one question to pose about that thing at Bob Jones.
Yeah.
The assault at Bob Jones. And then I'll boil dinner on my new stove. I won't keep you. where are the parents? I mean, if I were nuts enough to have a daughter at Bob Jones University, there's all sorts of mechanisms you can bring to bear. You know, there's all sorts of pressure that parents can bring to bear.
But Diane, if you're the kind of nut job parent that sends their child to Bob Jones University, you're going to be as awed by authority as everyone else is. And so when the dean of students says, you need to forgive your rapist and pray for God to cleanse your heart of hate. Well, baby girl, I guess that's what you got to do.
Well, Bob, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that all the parents there are like that. Maybe they are, and it is difficult for me to believe that. I mean, it's one thing to go along with church authority and all that. It's another thing when it's, you know, your daughter.
Agreed.
In pain and in distress. So I just, that's the disconnect for me. I take what you say seriously. I just cannot believe they're all homogeneous like that, all having the same script in their mind, like we'll defer to authority even though our daughter's been raped and that's a violation of our daughter's virginity. You know, there's a whole other script that can go on in their minds at that point.
You would like that to be the case. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well,
but now I can't let you go to boiled dinner quite
yet. I think I told you I have a new stove,
yes,
right?
Yes. And I love how you describe that boil dinner. You know, when we get done with the program here, I'm going to radiate dinner.
Oh, do you have a microwave?
Oh yes.
Oh, I do not own a microwave, or I might not be saying boil. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I just haven't gotten into microwaves, but I'm sure they're real handy. I had one at one time. I had a couple at one time, and. Yeah.
Well, this is a stopgap that arises out of our stove having been fried by the derecho of two years and several months ago.
Oh, did that happen to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Took out the fridge. Took out the refrigerator. Took out the water heater, the washing machine, the dryer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, then you have to use anything.
Got the microwave too, but we were able to replace that.
Yeah. Yeah. Microwaves are like cheap now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Relatively.
Yeah, so I've got a little toaster oven that can do a, you know, it's a convection toaster oven, and it can do a pretty good job, and yeah, and a dual burner hot plate. So yeah, I mean we get the job done, but it's,
you get by. Yeah,
it's a little bit of a pain, but whatever.
Yeah, it is a kind of a pain. Well, it's, you know, I'm just boiling stuff for myself. When the stove blew up in my face. Basically, an Amana stove, just 8 or 10 years old. The element went out, and there was a poof of bright light in my face as I was bending down to use the broil function for the first time in 10 years.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
The only time I used the broil function, the element. Well, you know, I thought, I can get by without a stove because the burners still work. So, you know, to heck with the oven. But then. The stove indicator light, I just used the burners for a while, and then the stove indicator light went off, and I couldn't shut off the burners. I thought, well, you know, I took the burners out, and I would have to flip the circuit breaker when I left home because I was a little concerned that because I couldn't turn the heat to the burners off, I'd burn down the house. And that's when I thought, okay, enough with the crock pot and toaster oven, I'll get a stove. And I'll probably never use the broil or bake on it. I wish I could just trade you. I'll take your microwave. You can have my stove. Just pay the shipping.
but before you go, I've got a Kansas story that simply has to be addressed, Diane.
Oh, is it going to make me depressed?
You may well have heard this story because the dateline on the story is September 24th, and it comes from the Topeka Capital Journal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The paper of record here, yeah.
You know how pious your Governor Sam Brownback is, right?
Oh, God, anyone with the name of a snake. Ugh. Brownback, doesn't that just sound like a reptile?
It makes him sound slitheritious.
Ugh.
So
yellowback, brownback.
He's got this great big whopping budget problem in Kansas. He's just about
a whopping what Bob?
budget problem. He's just about about destroyed the state with all of his right wing budget hackery.
The Laffer curve, which was discredited so long ago. I mean,
bingo. That's why it's a Laffer curve.
Yeah, laughing. We're all laughing here. He's ruined us.
So they're desperate in the Brownback administration to figure out a way to raise a little money, Diane.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. The sex toy thing?
They're having a dildo auction in Kansas.
Oh, my God. The goddess of irony
Right.
Isn't she wonderful?
Oh, beautiful. I never appreciated her until I started to listen to your program. I mean, now she's everywhere.
Oh, she is. I mean, and granted, she, as Kate has reminded us on more than one occasion, she can be mean. It's not so funny when you're on the receiving end of the goddess of irony, but if you're an innocent spectator bystander, she can be a real hoot. And in this case, to have a pious, upstanding, God-fearing, Christian governor of Kansas like Sam Brownback and all the hell that he's raised trying to make sure that the Homer sectionals can't destroy traditional marriage and all the little fetuses are protected in Kansas and now his administration is going to auction off $163,000 of dildos.
Because of a failure to pay taxes.
Right.
That was the deal.
Yeah,
right?
The name of the company was Bang. Adult DVDs, novelty items, clothing, and other products. a man named Larry Minkoff owned United Outlets LLC and sold stuff under the label Bang.
Is it just online, or was there a store?
I don't know. But the Kansas Department of Revenue, and I thought taxation was evil and wicked, according to Republicans. But the Brownback administration got all hot and bothered to get Mr. Minkoff to pay them $163,986 in state taxes.
Yeah.
And how's
he going to spin that as doing us a favor?
Well, I'm sure that there is some program for snowflake fetuses or marriage protection. I mean, it's got to be out there. So the state of Kansas ordered the seizure of Mr. Minkoff's inventory.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I was thinking it might be in Topeka, just because Topeka's such an armpit. I'm sorry. It's just...
Well, he does. I just scrolled down the story here. He had two business locations in Topeka.
Yeah.
He also had outlets in Wichita, Junction City, and Kansas City, Kansas.
Yeah.
Junction
City has some nice spots, but it's where Fort Riley is. You know, sometimes you get some real... strange stuff near an army base. I can imagine.
So the Brownback administration sent out the revenuers to seize his assets.
Yeah.
You know, the goddess of irony just doesn't quit.
Yeah.
And so they ran in and seized all the assets and started opening up the boxes, and the pious, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing revenuers of Sam Brownback went, Cletus, I think we got a box of sex toys here. Boss, they're all boxes of sex toys.
Well, Bob, what did they expect, I wonder?
Well,
did they know who they were raiding?
But the funny part is, they knew who they were raiding. They were trying to put him out of business.
Yeah, but they didn't expect to find sex toys. They expected to find Bibles. I mean...
But the fun part is, once it broke that Sam Brownback had sent his revenue agents out to seize sex toys. It didn't play so well. So then the state gave all the sex toys back to Mr. Minkoff, and he said, tell you what I'll do. I'll auction these and give you the proceeds of the marital aid sale.
Oh, they have to be labeled marital aid. That's their cover. They're for... Oh, this is just ridiculous. I can't even process this.
And they were apparently, I don't know if the sale has gone on yet or not, but they were apparently all housed in a Kansas City, Kansas warehouse where they could be inspected by potential purchasers.
Let's see.
A glass pleasure wand. No idea. A cyber skin foot stroker. The Pipe Dream Fantasy Love Swing.
I'm not even sure what all this is. I mean, I have an active imagination. I guess I'll leave it at that.
But... let's see, two sets of sparkling sequin lounge pants, sizes large and small, as well as the good girl, bad girl wrist cuffs.
Oh, my Lord. Well, how can you spin this so that the public doesn't associate those descriptions with his administration? I don't care if there's a middleman in an auction.
No, I just want to see a picture of Sam Brownback and Mrs. Brownback quietly sneaking into the warehouse wearing big noses and glasses and trench coats.
Oh, my God. I have two little stories to tell on Mr. Brownback, and I've never met him. Apparently, he's a graduate of Kansas State University. And for whatever that's worth, some people in this town probably know him. I don't. But my hairstylist was telling me that
your hairdresser knows for sure.
Yeah, my hairdresser knows for sure. She lives in a little town called Wamico, and for the 4th of July, she got just soused, and she and her husband got soused, and that were in Wamico for fireworks and all, and apparently this man walked up to her, and she just pounded him on the chest and said, "How are you, guy?" And I said, "Don't tell me that was our governor." She said, "Yep." So he took the pounding well from, I guess she was just really looped. And had no idea that was the governor. And I thought, well, how hard did you hit him? How hard did you hit him? Real hard. And he took it well. I guess he was campaigning. The next story is more interesting, I think. I used to be really, really good friends with an investigative reporter for the Topeka Capital Journal before that paper was taken over by out-of-town interlopers who got rid of most, if not all, their investigative reporters. You know that story. You know how that goes. It's bad.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, this guy, my friend, his beat was Manhattan and Topeka, and he'd go out to western Kansas and do some stories. He told me a story, because he would be in and out of the state capitol all the time, and Brownback had an office there. And anyway, I guess this is true, given the source. He said that Sam Brownback used to wash people's feet in his office.
Ew!
I don't think that fits with the adult toy stuff. I think that's a biblical thing. Although maybe it's an erotic exercise. I have no clue. But
we'll see. Yeah, okay, so we got to work backwards on Brownback here. He started out, one of your kind of snake handling, strychnine swigging, floor rolling, tongue speaking, evangelical fundies.
I don't know.
And then he saw the light and became and converted to Roman Catholicism.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, he's part of that family thing in Washington, isn't he?
I do believe. Because remember, he's been a member of the new United States Senate, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So there,
for a long time.
I mean, so
long time before he came back to ruin us. Yeah.
Right. So there's some backstory going on there.
Oh.
And consequently, he is super zealous. I mean, I figure if he could get away with burning heretics at the stake, he would. I love the statement that his spokesperson issued when the world found out that the governor of Kansas was going to participate in a dildo auction. You can't just say that with a straight face. Eileen Hawley is her name, and she said, "While we do not agree with the type of business involved here, it was nonetheless a legal business that was closed due to failure to pay taxes. The state cannot legally destroy the property. Returning the property to the owner would have rewarded the business that violated state tax law. This is the same process used by previous administrations." Never bothering to mention that in the entire history of Kansas, there has never before been, a dildo.
I mean, this is where Carrie Nation was stomping around. My God. Well, who's
God almighty, she would have fainted in her tracks.
Oh, or taken up. I mean, who knows? Carrie Nation probably was no, well, you know, she probably would have raised the row. But who was that woman who said what you just quoted? Who's that?
That is her spokeswoman. Or his spokeswoman.
Okay, so she's supposedly a media specialist.
Right, Eileen Hawley.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a spin, isn't it? I don't know. I mean, how come Christians always get off the hook for their hypocrisy?
Don't say get off in the goddess. The goddess is on duty.
I'm so sorry. I did not mean to. But how come they always get? How come they always excuse? How come Christians always get excused? I'm thinking now of Tammy Faye Baker and her husband, and I don't know. I wasn't really into watching that whole circus, but, you know, people feel sorry. They become victims. You know, they're so easily victims. Victimhood.
I think the short answer to your question, Diane, is that they get away with it because we expect them to do it. We expect them to be liars and cheats and hustlers and hucksters.
Yeah. However, I think within their own circle, I think that the second they can spin victimhood, their whole cult is based on that. They're victims, even when they're not, you know, going back to
absolutely. Absolutely. And remember, the essence of what they profess to believe is that forgiveness, divine forgiveness, is to be had merely for the asking. So whatever they do, you know, when Ted Haggard got caught snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt, I have asked Jesus to forgive me, and I can assure you that he has. When the Baptist minister gets caught in the parking lot in Oklahoma City trolling for rent boys, I've had a spiritual lapse, and I've asked my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, to forgive me, and I can assure you that he has.
Oh, dear God.
Because one of the singular elements of that kind of Protestant evangelical fundamentalism is a concept called once saved, always saved.
That's just like a get-out-of-jail-free card
yes, it is.
Forever.
Yes, it is.
You know,
no personal responsibility, nothing.
From a very young age, I remember my dad saying he wasn't part of organized religion because people would, you know, he would see people do it and then they would confess and then they would go back and do it. And I guess as a child, he was just like, well, that's nuts. So, you know, that's a racket. That there was, and I don't care if they have a racket. I care that I have to be subject to the spectacle in some way or another. You know what I mean?
You get tired of being publicly embarrassed.
Well, I mean, they keep throwing these spectacles up because they're so prominent in government and media. So any of their, whatever they do can become fodder for either being forgiven or being victim or, I mean, I don't even want to hear them explain it. It's like being codependent on, you know, just to pile, you know what? And so I've been done with them for quite a while. Doesn't mean I don't have spiritual bent. I mean, I just don't equate that to organized religion. I'm certainly not Christianity. I think they've ruined their brand. You know, I really do. I was in the recycling.
But they can be forgiven for it.
Well, not from me, you know. I mean, I think that's just within their own circles, obviously. But, you know, I realized that, I don't know if I ever mentioned this before, it's no big deal, but I was in Manhattan. We have to go to a warehouse to do our recycling. It's not picked up on the curb. That's fine. I'm just glad I can recycle.
Yeah, you mean the Little Apple, not the big one.
Yeah, the Little Apple. I remember in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, they just came curbside and picked up our recycling. But then I heard there was a big scandal and that they were just putting it in with the rest of the trash. So I'm kind of glad I'm actually driving to a warehouse and you know, dealing with my own recycling with a private firm who is only in business because they'll make money off of the recycling. I mean, I kind of like that. But anyway, they have these big bins where we can donate our aluminum cans. We can put them in one bin for Habitat for Humanity, another bin for youth softball. You know what I'm saying? We just donate our aluminum cans, and those organizations get the money from them. Well, I accidentally brushed up against one of those big bins, and I looked, and the minute I saw the label, I just recoiled as if I bumped into a rattlesnake. It was so visceral. It said Christian Youth something something, and my arm hit a hot stove. I was just bounding away from it before my brain even registered any cognitive script, you know? And that was a couple years ago, and that's when I thought, man, I'm really done with them. I mean, it's not really in my mind. I am done with them on a real level that, you know, it's done.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
And when I go to my sister's house for Thanksgiving, this is a minor thing too, but, you know, I'm like, why do I have to listen to these prayers? Well, I can do it for the sake of, you know, when my sister says a prayer, all of a sudden she starts speaking like, and thou, I can't even duplicate it, but it's some kind of language where, you know, she wouldn't normally walk around saying, and thou hast, you know, it's.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sitting there thinking, well,
no. See, I'm the guy who does that because, for instance, you know, I'm the one who says, oh, this certainly sucketh, you know. yea, verily, this sucketh mightily. I talk like that.
Yeah, but not over Thanksgiving dinner in a real prayer.
No. My darling, thou hast roastedest a magnificent bird this fine holiday meal.
Well,
verily, you know, thou art a potent chef.
Right. It's like, I'm like, just thank. Whomever, but I, a long time ago, I figured out that I wasn't going to let the right wing take away my family. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of love in my family, so I really try not to, and I think they try not to, you know, have any fights over it. My mom kind of, if it starts, she's like, let's stop this, and we do. And so I long ago thought, okay, they're Republicans and they're right wingers, I guess. But I cannot sacrifice my family to that argument. So I don't, because I want to have the relationship because there's so much good in it and all that. I mean, I love my family. But when I have a Thanksgiving prayer with thou and verily, and then it goes into, and bless the greatest country on earth that ever has been. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Oh, God. But I just look around the room and check my iPhone. And,
know. You kind of whistle the Jeopardy theme to yourself.
Well, I mean, it's just kind of, because sometimes there are other people at the table that are non-family members, and it's sort of like, well, how can we assume that this is just really something everyone's into? But they do. The Christians think that everyone's into it. I'll never forget the Thanksgiving when my father, you know, he put his head up after one of those kinds of prayers, and he looked at me and said, do you have anything to tell us from Gurumai Chidvalasananda, which is I'm on a meditation path, and I studied with, you know, someone considered a meditation master for quite a while when I was on the East Coast. I have nothing to sell at all, nothing to sell. It's a meditation path, you know, but that my father would look up and say, do you have anything to say from Gurumai Chidvalasananda? It just kind of blew me away because he got that not everyone at the table had the same idea. And I will be grateful to him forever for that.
Oh, that's beautiful. Let's just address this real quickly. It's not that they talk about this stuff because they think everybody is into it. They talk about this stuff because they feel like they are personally privileged and empowered to cram it down the throats of whomever they happen to be around.
Oh, God, that's, yeah. And they think it's a burning house and they have to rush in and save me or something, you know.
Right.
Even on that level.
Because remember, you know, they've got the Great Commission in the New Testament that says, go ye unto all the nations and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, really?
And so they have to. I mean, Jesus won't like them if they're not pushy and obnoxious about it. By the way, there is a little praise going up right now. I just got a note on Skype chat from Carol.
Uh-huh.
And Carol just said, Lord Jesus, thank Diane for making me laugh so hard.
What did we say? I don't remember.
Oh, no,
I mean,
we just have these wonderful conversations. And Carol noted a couple of minutes ago, she said, I do love this lady, but I am a little bit pissed that there was a sex toy sale in my neighborhood and no one called me.
Well, Carol's not in Topeka.
No, but the warehouse where you could go and view it was in Kansas City, Kansas.
I thought she lived somewhere in Missouri.
She does.
Oh.
She's within an easy reach of Kansas City, Kansas.
Yeah, that's right, of course. And she drives back those cars in, you know, to Bartle Hall or wherever, those wonderful antique cars. Well, Bob, I'm sure she was laughing at your description of the toys and how that's playing in the media.
No, I think you had a hand in it too, Diane.
Yeah, well, I'm just to the point where, you know, it's either funny or it's just disgusting, and it's really both. But if we can laugh at it, I guess that's a good thing. And
beats the daylights out of crying at it.
Well, it's not really going to affect my, I mean, like, it's not really going to affect who I am because I'm not listening to them. So it's not the worst thing to be exposed to it. It says much more about them. I really think part of that is proselytizing. And, you know, because my sister-in-law, who I love dearly, I will try my best to stay out of these conversations with her because she is born again, and so is my sister, whatever that means. And good for them if it's something wonderful for them. I mean,
whatever
I would
that means.
Whatever that means, born again. I mean, I've had experiences in meditation, which I could label something and talk to people about
But the thing is, the experience you had, words will never do justice to.
And it's
a personal experience.
Mine.
And see, yeah. this loops so nicely, Diane, back to the origins and back to the filibobster, because once again, you've had millionaire NFL players running into the end zone and pointing at the sky for years, and nobody ever said boo. One Muslim player goes into the end zone and bows down and puts his head on the ground in gratitude to Allah.
Oh.
The referee throws the yellow hanky, cites him for unsportsmanlike conduct, and Roger Goodell the next morning is sitting there going, oh, F me, not again.
Is this recent?
This is last night in Kansas City.
Oh, Kansas City. I just got home from teaching, and I didn't get all your filibuster, but this was in Kansas City. My God, Kansas City has a Muslim community, and I mean it's not, it has diversity. It should be able to accommodate such. What's that about?
Well, but it's also got a bunch of beer swilling right wingers too.
But the
referee threw the flag and said that it was unsportsmanlike conduct because he went to the ground and it constituted taunting the other team.
That's bad. What a bad interpretation of putting your head on the ground. I mean that could be ultimate respect to nature. I mean, there's a lot of ways you could interpret that. It could be interpreted as what a humbling gesture, you know? Why interpret it like that?
Well, but the thing is, this goes right, you know, right over the plate, and we'll hit it right out of the park to this notion of privilege and empowerment of Christians to impose their particular worldview on us. But God forbid somebody. I mean, what if you know what we need? We badly need a member of the NFL who is a follower of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Yeah.
And then after that, we need some manifestation of Flying Spaghetti Monster worship. Maybe running around in a circle and making googly eyes and waving your fingers as if they were noodly appendages.
Oh. And how could you get thrown off for that? It involves food that we all like. You know, it's...
Right, and let's understand. You know, you were talking about a prayer at the Thanksgiving table. Okay,
no.
You know what? I'm not going to get real bent out of shape about that, because, I mean, I'm not for the spoken word part, but I have no issue whatsoever with, you know, the plates there in front of you, and before you just dive in and knock yourself senseless with whatever it is in turkey that puts us all to sleep.
Yeah.
I have no problem with taking a couple of minutes and thinking about all the people who were involved, and all the way down to the turkey.
Yeah.
And having a degree of respect for everything that goes into human beings being able to eat on this planet, and specifically of being able as a human being to eat on this planet when there are so very many millions who aren't and can't.
Well, gratitude is a very powerful emotion and gesture, and it's very true, and it really kind of transcends all this thee and thou and greatest country of the earth on the earth. And, you know, gratitude is the Native American Indians seem to know all about that, right? When they would kill a buffalo and they would be...
Yeah, or in anything.
Respectful. Anything, right.
A friend of mine told me, he said, you know, when we kill a deer, he said, we don't feel like we have gone out and hunted a deer. We feel like a deer has presented itself to us.
Right. Very humbling.
Yeah, and what an humbling worldview that is. But I got to tell you,
gratitude is a good. I mean, gratitude is something that, from my point of view, someone with a balanced sense of self call it. You know, that comes from a person who's grounded in reality and balanced and developed, and this other stuff. I don't know, if we put these people on the couch, I just don't know what kind of self they have, and I'm not one to, you know, I'm not a psychologist.
Oh, that's a crawl around a spider web that's going to leave you just kind of scratching at yourself for the rest of the day. Oh, get it off me. Yeah. but I wanted to mention something to you, Diane. You know how we were talking a couple of weeks ago about fleet-footed Achilles and all of that stuff.
Oh, your phrases and from the Odyssey, Iliad and the Odyssey.
Right. So we've got one for you now.
Good.
Because Carol has noted.
But I'll have to bracket it and not use it, you know.
Well, this applies to you. This is yours.
Oh,
this is yours. And Carol and Carol has given it to you.
Good. Thank you,
she
Carol.
She says, no, Diane, you are marvelously coherent. So so henceforward, you are Diane from Kansasstan, marvelously coherent, or marvelously coherent Diane from Kansasstan.
Oh, thank you, Carol. I wish my students would think that, but I'm so glad that Carol has bestowed that, because I'd like to own that and aspire to it. Cool.
You know what?
Cool.
You can. I suggest you get a T-shirt and have "marvelously coherent" printed on it, and wear it to class.
Oh, you know You know the term the word "marvelous." I love that word. And coherent. You know, it has. It's like holistic. It's like holism. And I thank you, Carol. I'll be using that. Yeah. I'd like to mention something about, you said something about the Native Americans and their attitude towards the earth, the natural environment, the animals. This is not an advertisement, but I'm lucky to have a budget at the university, and we're bringing in, at my suggestion, the university, people got on board. I was able to throw some money into it from my university budget. We're bringing in Jeffrey Hollander really soon, the founder of, co-founder of Seventh Generation out in Vermont. And, he's really known as a social entrepreneur. He's no longer CEO of, Seventh Generation, but I've heard him speak before, and he's really got a young vibe, which I think my business students really need to see. A young vibe about social entrepreneurship and serving community, the triple bottom line business, but he also explains to the audience where that phrase Seventh Generation comes from. And it's, as I recall, it's the Iroquois attitude that they make no decisions without taking into account the impacts on the next generation.
Oh, that, no, it's not just the Haudenosaunee. It extends across. I've learned about it among my Anishinaabe friends. I think we would call it a continental mindset. It's something that obtained upon this continent prior to the arrival of white folks. This idea that you make no decision without. It's almost like you've got some sort of, well, like I got no business even trying to explain this because, you know, white boy. But it's almost like there's an ombudsman.
Oh. Uh-huh.
For the future. So, for instance, when a dirty, evil, corrupt hillbilly from West Virginia goes to Ashland and Iron County, Wisconsin, and says, "You know what I want to do? I want to blow up your mountains. I want to dig a hole that's 1,400 feet deep, a half mile wide, and 22 miles long, and I want to suck as much profit out of it as I can and ruin every last bit of fresh water you've got." Lo and behold, the people there say, No, we considered the seven generations, and no, we're not going to let you. We're going to stop it by any means necessary, because we have a debt that is owed to seven generations from now, and we don't want seven generations out for them to look back at us and go on the ground because we didn't do our job.
It's such a highly developed sense of self, in my view. Well, Hollander may have referred to the Iroquois because that's a northeastern, you know, he founded the company in Vermont, and, you know, Iroquois is up there in that quadrant of things. But you're saying it was across tribes.
My understanding, yeah.
Well, you know, I think I just saw, and this is not very insightful or anything, but I just saw a similarity between Christians and that kind of capitalists, and I'm not sure what other kind of capitalist there is, except we're bringing in the social entrepreneur, you know, to provide an alternative. That's the whole point.
Yeah, and there are people out there who are trying to figure out, and frankly, I'm not sharp enough to say yay or nay. My suspicion is nay, Diane, but there are people who are trying to figure out a humane capitalism.
Well,
now, I don't, just based on having read Adam Smith and I don't know if that can happen because I saw an interesting comment. I forget who made it, but maybe it was over on my Facebook page. Someone said if Adam Smith published The Wealth of Nations today, he would be laughed out of polite society. And then said, "Can you imagine a peer review committee taking seriously his claim of the workings of the invisible hand?"
Yeah, the metaphor.
I mean, that's just an economic deus ex machina.
Yeah. Well, he's talked a lot more about social justice and the dangers of antitrust and monopoly power. You know, he was a moral philosopher who wrote The Theory of Moral Sentiments before he wrote Wealth of Nations. So,
and that is a far more impressive document.
Yeah. And I think people just, you know, in my view, the people have, like, globbed onto that invisible hand thing because it's kind of an excuse for abdicating things to the market that do not belong there.
Absolutely.
And to me, all roads lead to public policy, but, you know, it's kind of like throwing water in the wind to say that because, you know, of the neoliberal bent that's not just here, but all across the world.
But
you know?
Yeah, and it's a toxic mindset in my mind, Diane, because anything. I mean, okay, so let's apply this to climate change because there are people who do it. There are people who say that we don't have to worry about climate change because when it gets bad enough, technology and human creative genius will provide us a fix.
Oh yeah,
and it's you know that's straight out of Oral Robertson. Expect a miracle every day. I mean that's the dude with the cheese sandwich in his hip pocket playing hacky sack with himself, walking through the Grateful Dead concert parking lot, going, "Need a miracle, need a miracle, two tickets, need a miracle."
Well, it's a real abdication of responsibility, which. You know, a lot of psychologists have made that comment about the U.S. culture. It's like Eric Fromm and Marcuse. I mean, one of them wrote The Flight from Freedom. And, you know, I think I just saw a similarity between these capitalists and the religious right, and that is their ego development is really stifled. It's really stifled. You don't abdicate responsibility when you're fully functioning. You know what I mean?
No, you embrace it. You empower
yeah.
it. You revel in it.
Yeah, the opportunities, the ability to, yeah. Well, I think there's a. I'm getting this vision of them with the soft, muddied middle. You know, like they're a cookie, and their middle is just real soft and mushy.
Hard shell but hard shell Baptist on the outside.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I'm fascinated by concepts like the beneficial corporation that was.
Oh yeah, the triple bot. Yeah, the benefit corporation. I just I'm on the editorial board of the second volume of Business Ethics and Society. The first volume was five books, and this one's going to be six, and so we're gearing up for the second edition. So I was asked, what should our new entries be? Oh, I had a list, and guess what? Benefit Corporation was right at the top because it happened after the publication of the first issue of the encyclopedia. So Benefit Corporation and B-Lab, they're auditing the organization that offers an audit for them. Yeah, I'm going to ask Hollander because I'm going to have some time with Hollander. He's going to come to he's speaking to the university and Manhattan community in this big hall. That's the big deal. But I'm having him come to my class of 20-some people, and I've got him on my dean's calendar and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm gonna have some time with him, dinner. I'm going to ask him about the Benefit Corporation because the social entrepreneurs, I've been reading that they've been pushing for it. And my graduate students looked it up. You know, I said, get your iPads out and let's invest, you know, let's Google the Benefit Corporation, and that was last week, and they looked at the website. 27 states have passed it. 27. And the first one was Maryland in 2010 or 2011. You know, that's kind of quick. That's kind of quick, isn't it? I mean, these
yeah.
governments can't do a damn thing, and think of how quickly 27 states and several more thinking of it. So there's a map you can, if you go to benefitcorp.com, they have a map that shows that progression of states passing the Benefit Corporation into law as a charter. So 27 since the first one did it in 2010 or 2011, I'd have to look it up. But
I think it would be fascinating to understand, and this is a conversation I would really love for us to have some evening, Diane. Just a little broader understanding.
Yeah.
Because you've got the expertise for it. I'd like, well, I'd like, I'd like, I'd like to understand what it means for, say, someone who wants to start. Okay, here, let me just throw out a hypothetical. Let's say Bob wins the lottery.
Mm.
And I've got, you know, $1 million burning a hole in my pocket.
Mm.
And I want to start one of these beneficial corporations, and I want to make it easy and attractive for people to put solar panels on their houses.
Mm.
What does that mean structurally? I mean, does the board of directors behave the same way? Because within the traditional corporate charter, the only obligation a corporation has is to do the things set out in its charter and to do them profitably.
Well,
what changes?
Yeah, I've looked into this a bit, and I'm going to be asking Hollander more about it and some other people about it. Because I'm just able to glean some things from newspaper articles and the website. But my understanding is that, first of all, corporate charters, way, way back before the corporate ascendancy, were the first charters in this country were based on corporations that were fulfilling some public good, like a toll road.
Yeah, and Dr. Bill has gone into that as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, state legislators could just excommunicate it. They could kill a corporation. They could say, haul your books into the Capitol and open them up for us. Oh, we don't like this. You're done. So to me, it kind of harkens back to an idea that was had that, you know, earlier in this country. But my understanding of the benefit corporation is that, first of all, it matches stockholders that are interested in that triple bottom line, you know, serving economic, environmental, and social goods simultaneously. It's a way to attract the kind of investors who want to be holding that stock, which I think is important. Because one could argue there are socially responsible funds out there. Yeah, funds. But I think it's a different story to say, I want to buy stock in that corporation, and it is known for that. And then the second thing is that it makes it difficult, if not impossible, for stockholders to sue based on the corporation privileging social goals over financial goals.
Well, part of the reason I asked is because, you know, there are a number of different divestment movements out there. Course, we all know that the divestment movement had a profound impact on South Africa.
Yeah.
We now
yeah.
see a divestment movement that, even though the for-profit media here aren't particularly reporting it, is having a profound impact on Israel. And you've got millions of dollars in pension funds now that are being withdrawn from the hydrocarbon industry.
Yeah, Rockefeller.
Witness the Rockefeller Foundation. Yeah. So that means that out there somewhere within the capitalist dynamic, of which I'm quite skeptical, really.
Yeah.
Within that capitalist dynamic, there's a bunch of money wandering around looking for somewhere to call home.
Yeah, yeah.
And if a business can be successful within that beneficial dynamic, then wouldn't that by definition create an almost magnetic draw for those funds? I mean, you know, let's say you've been paying into a pension fund for your entire career, and you're pleased to know that your pension fund has pulled out of giant Hydrocarbon Corporation of America.
Mm.
But you still at the same time want to see your money work, because it's your pension we're talking about.
Mm.
So, you know, if they can make it work, I think it's at least terribly, terribly interesting.
There might, well, you've raised an interesting possibility. I mean, 27 states have done this in rather record time, given that governments don't seem to be doing much these days here. And what about a fund for B corporations, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of a mutual fund for blah, 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 a mutual fund for benefit corporations, where you diversify the risk, any risk there is across, that's the whole point of a fund. You diversify the risk, but you're diversifying it across benefit corporations. There's one more advantage to a benefit corporation, Bob, because I was kind of skeptical about the argument that it protects against stockholder lawsuits? Because I know that in the United States, and you know this too, I'm sure, that the courts go by the business judgment rule, and it's really hard to sue board of directors for anything as long as they show that their process was done in an informed way, in good faith and all that. And I know that a lot of stockholder lawsuits fail. I mean, it's just a matter of record. Not, you know, I mean, the majority of them. But if it's a benefit corporation, if it's acquired by another firm, my understanding is that the acquiring firm legally cannot change the triple bottom line mission and activities of the acquired firm. And to me, now when I saw that in print, I was like, and I'm still investigating this.
You just opened up another.
But you know, it'd be like Ben and Jerry's couldn't be changed because they were bought out by, I don't know who they were bought out.
You mean bought out by Bovine Growth Hormone Dairy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I've got the faculties to actually absorb all of this stuff, but I really would like to read more. Because among other things, for instance, you know, when a corporation marches its happy bottom line into bankruptcy court, the first thing the bankruptcy court and the bankrupt corporation do is list the pensions as liabilities and list the human beings who have contributed to the previous success of that corporation as liabilities to be liquidated.
God.
And one wonders how the bankruptcy code would handle something like that.
I don't know. That's a very interesting question, because if economic goals are by law not to be prioritized over social and economic goals, I mean, you've just raised a really good question, and that's why I say I have to investigate more, because I'm only seeing the surface. I'm thinking Hollander might know more from the ground, being a social entrepreneur, but not all social entrepreneurs get a benefit charter, you know. But I have a feeling he's going to know about it. And
I hope you'll report back. And
yeah.
I don't know, maybe put a little bug in his ear that there are a whole bunch of wonderful activist, progressive people who would love to hear more from him, and maybe we'll just talk.
Oh, sure. I have some time with him, and I'll do that. He's coming October 14th, and I've got two calendar days kind of blocked out for him and escorting him around and having some time with him. And I'm real excited. It's I'm just real excited about it. I fell in with a group of progressives on campus, and they do, I mean, this is the same lecture series that brought in Noam Chomsky, Thomas Franks, Russ Feingold. I mean, it's a lecture series started by progressive political scientists in the 1960s. And I just crossed over from the College of Business right into their group and said, let's talk about, you know, a subject that could be of interest to all of us. And so this came out. And then I also suggested we get John Ruggie from Harvard, and he and I are corresponding a bit about the possibility of bringing him in, because he was the special representative to the United Nations and drafted the UN Principles of Business Responsibilities that were ratified in 2011. And right before ratification, a whole bunch of corporations met in Atlanta. I found this by some deep digging into some corporate memos. They met in Atlanta to discuss what those principles might mean for, you know, their corporations. And that's all I know about that. But he's that might work out, because I also think that that's a really good thing for us in this community to be hearing about. So if you can imagine, in the middle of Kansas,
I can't imagine. And you know what? It needs to be said in the middle of Kansas, Diane, much or more. It needs to be said in the middle of Alabama. One little tangent offshoot of this. Last night on the program, I talked about this Tim Dickinson article over at Rolling Stone about the Koch brothers. And if you get a chance to read up on it and report back, not that I'm passing out assignments or anything, but
well, I'll take it.
But this, he goes into some detail of this trademarked strategy inside the Coke empire called MBM, market-based management.
Oh, yeah, the value added.
Oh, is that what that is?
I think you reported it as value added, didn't you? Didn't you use those words?
No, I don't think I did.
Oh, value added. Well, that's where it's coming from, because the new employee-employer contract, there's a chapter in the text I teach from that covers this. It's all about employees and compensated for value added. It's a thing. I think that's where that's coming from.
Is it by it's a thing? Does that mean it's a con?
Well, value added is so it just plays into that whole job security thing and lack of loyalty to employers because it's here today, gone tomorrow. I mean, how can everyone in the corporation be value added at any given time? I just don't know how that's accounted for. I'm skeptical of it, but it's a concept, and I think that's what you were talking about, that they're paying people based on their how much value they add to.
Well, and they're paying people based on their willingness to take to not play it safe and take risks and play outside, you know, color outside the lines, and pretend
right.
that environmental rules don't exist.
Did they say that?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a paragraph in there that says, you know, if you work for Coke and you're not willing to push the envelope, you're not going to be a success at Coke.
You know, I once met with the vice president of Coke over lunch many, many, many years ago. He was in charge of philanthropy. I'm not going to name names, but I was put on his lunch schedule because he was looking for, you know, maybe they could endow a chair. You know what I'm saying? I have an endowed chair, but it ain't the Coke endowed chair. I was like, I just wasn't, you know, and then the foundation people came to me. The Coke has a mission that talks about value, defined culture, and that's up your alley. And I'm like, I'm not interested. I mean, I was just like,
I hate it that I get so nervous when I hear these things, but I can't help thinking within that context of the former CEO of BB&T, which is a humongous regional bank in this area. And he took his millions and, for instance, went down to Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia, and endowed a chair of Ayn Rand Economics.
Yeah.
You know, right smack dab in the middle of their business department. And so you've got some professor down there who, I can't remember if they followed through on it, but who theoretically would be spending, you know, some three-hour class semester after semester teaching impressionable young college students that unregulated capitalism and pure mercenary greed were virtues.
Oh, God. Well, see, my class is about the opposite, really. So, I mean, my field. And we have quite a presence in the College of Business. We have a long history. I mean, most of the time you have to have corporate social responsibility and business ethics in Catholic universities. They've been the ones. But for some reason, Kansas State I know the dean who used to be vice chancellor here, who went off to a seminar at Yale and came back. I wasn't here at the time. He came back saying, you know, we're going to have corporate social responsibility in the College of Business, and they have ever since, as a course, as a curriculum. And so there I am with a really nice young man from, well, we were about the same age, you know, from Coke, talking about, you know, money, and I'm just like, you know, it's not for sale, you know? It's been in our curriculum since the 1960s. We're not going to turn it into Ayn Rand or whatever. I can't even imagine it. You know, flight from freedom. Flight from freedom. That's all that's about. Flight from responsibility. Flight to freedom. Flight from responsibility. That's what I should have said.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, just a general recommendation, not just for you, but for everyone. Anyone who gets a chance to watch the John Oliver clip from last weekend, in which he deconstructs Ayn Rand, it is not to be missed.
Did you see that movie about her? That let's see, I think it had Eric stolen it. I can't remember. There was some, oh, Murren. Helen Murren played the Ayn Rand person.
Oh, my God.
Did you see that movie?
No.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's just kind of creepy. It's kind of creepy.
Well, she was. I mean,
she was creepy.
Yeah.
And a hypocrite. And, well, all I can say is that coursework's not for sale here, but I guess it is elsewhere. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, and Carol says she saw it. She says, awesome. By the way, Carol also noted, with regard to that marvelously coherent that you're going to have printed on a T-shirt, Carol said, you're welcome. We're all having T-shirts made.
But they all won't say the same thing, will they? That's the beauty of it.
No.
Right?
We're all followers now, Diane.
We're
followers of the marvelous coherence.
Oh, of the ideal, of that ideal. Yeah,
yes.
That's cool. I was trying to explain to someone today, everyone at the university bleeds purple, go Cats, and I just yawn and, you know, I'm not into it. And I tried to explain to this person, I said, I'm not loyal to an institution. I'm loyal to ideals. I'm like, does that make sense to you? I mean, we're at a university, you know. Oh, my God. You know, this loyalty, that's a problem, don't you think?
Right, and the eyes rolled and the jaw hung open. What?
No, they were okay.
No. I can't,
They're okay. I mean, they are at a university, but, you know, the identity with the sports, I don't have to tell you
well,
about
but
that.
I, you know, I mean, I do understand because I suffer from that. I'm a proud son of Harvard on the Mon, and when you cut me, I bleed old gold and blue, and I grieve. I mean, I grieve over the fact that my beloved football team has to rub a lump of coal from a coal mine where 29 men were incinerated to death for nothing but corporate greed. They have to rub that lump of coal every time they run out onto Mountaineer Field, and it makes me sick at heart, Diane.
Yeah, but Bob, that's not the same thing. You're grieving because of the contamination of the human spirit with that dark side. I mean, you want your institution elevated to where it belongs, and that includes the team. I don't see that as blind loyalty. I see that as still tied to some transcendental ideals, you know, and you're evaluating the situation based on them. Don't you think that's what that is?
Well, yeah, I kind of hope so, but by the same token, you know, the Mountaineers do play K-State now.
They do?
Yeah, we're in the same conference. We're rivals.
See, I wouldn't even know that. I really try to walk around not knowing things like that. I team teach with a wonderful executive in residence, and he's quite a donor to our institution. And he says right in front of the students, we have a little class on Wednesday night, he says, I'm going to get Dr. Swanson into sports. If it's the last thing I do,
doesn't matter if it's K-State curling, K-State basket weaving, K-State.
No, it has to be. I think it has to be football. And you know what? I admire this man. I love teaching with him. He knows so much what happens on boards of directors. He serves on them. He understands what codes of ethics are about and SEC rulings and stuff. I really need access to, you know, and. I mean, in terms of what actually happens in boardrooms and not proprietary information. But I really like him, but we just joke. I'm like, oh, no, it won't happen. And I kind of turn it around. I said, remember when you told me that you didn't succeed by having to play golf with people in the corporate world? I said, I'm kind of like that. So we're really the same. That seemed to do it. Oh, well. Bob, I should let you go. It's your program's coming.
Well, you've got dinner you have dinner to boil.
Yeah, and it's there. I've been watching it. You know, I eat mostly.
Wait, you're boiling dinner and doing conversation radio at the same time?
No, I'm just watching the water. I mean, I'm not doing anything. I'm not cooking. It's the bags in the water and it's on low and you know what happened? Here's the thing. I eat mostly organic and natural, that label. And they have, in the past few years, they've come up with some wonderful things that you can just, pouches of nice organic stew or something. You can just put it in water.
Oh.
That's what I do.
Now, see, you're rubbing it in. You're, Daggummit.
Why?
Manhattan, Kansas, and you can do that, and, you know, here I am in hillbilly hell, and, you know.
No, no, we have a little, it's called a People's Co-op. I used to be on the board a few years ago, and so it's literally a co-op, you know, like the old cooperative.
Oh, no, 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 I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's People's Co-op, and it's a small little, it used to just be in a house on a side street with just wooden shelves and wooden floor that creaked, but we've advanced to having a spot in a little kind of tastefully done strip mall. It's not that bad. It's just some little shops. And so we have a co-op, and most of our shoppers are members, and that's where the farmers bring in their, you know, organic.
And see, and that's, to me, Diane, that is beautiful. And it's no surprise to me that you've got that out in the Midwest. I mean, I remember.
See, Lawrence, Kansas, they have a mercantile that's huge. And you know what? Lawrence, bless them, they fought off Whole Foods. They said, we're not having Whole Foods come in here. We have a co-op. You know, Bob, I just want to tell you a short story. When I interviewed here and left wonderful Pittsburgh because of elderly ailing parents, and I thought it was time to come back, and it was. And they happened to have a position here that just suits me fine. But when I was interviewing, and at the end of the day, the first day, they offered me the position, and I said, I have to know that there's an organic food store here to move. And they said, okay, we'll call the professor in sociology, and tomorrow on your agenda, she'll take you to the one we know about. That's how it happened.
That's beautiful.
And she drove me to this little house in the middle of the old neighborhood, and it had creaking wooden floors and jars all about, but I saw the products. And I recognized them from how I shopped in Pittsburgh, and there was a big co-op in Pittsburgh. And then I could say, I will consider the offer. True story. It's that important. And it's here. That's the good news, isn't it?
Yeah, and see, that's, to sort of loop things back for just a minute, Diane, that's why things like, you know, the beneficial corporation, that's a great use for something like that. In a place like West Virginia. I mean, granted, you know, you can go into your local Wally World and there's a little bit of organic, and they're selling some LED light bulbs now, and you can go into Kroger and they've got eight shelves of organic and natural. But to be able to go into a place where that is the operating philosophy. I mean, there's a beautiful grocery like that in little tiny Ashland, Wisconsin, which is just lovely. Our buddy, Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, talks about how, you know, his family will scrimp and save and makes a conscious ethical decision to shop at the co-op because they love their children.
Yes, of course. Well, the supply chain is vetted there. I mean, it's tried and true. And you know, when they had that scare with dogs and cats dying from pet food and coming over from China, remember that?
Yeah.
I didn't have to worry. I only buy certain kinds of pet food that's within that genre. I get Halo Food, Ellen DeGeneres' company. I shop online, and then at the co-op they have that kind of natural pet food where we know our suppliers. We know the animals aren't going to be going to kidney failure. So, yeah, it's a cool thing. And I'm really always grateful it's here. But, Bob, if you ever go on the Benefit Corporation website, I believe you'll see a couple energy companies jumped in early on.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw at least one, and I haven't. They have a list of companies. And I've looked at it before, and but I know there was an energy company, and by now there's probably 10, I'm guessing. So, something else is happening. I don't know. It's like an alternative, and yet it harkens back to the way the corporate charter was done in our earlier days. So.
Yeah, and like what you said about the co-op in there in Kansas, you know, this it bears reminding that a great deal of progressivism was born in places like Kansas.
Oh, yeah, populism, too, yeah. Of course, populism even more.
And so it's kind of inspiring to realize that it's still they've never been successful in being able to utterly stamp it out.
Oh no, you know, this progressive committee on campus that I was able to join to start, you know, helping to bring in certain speakers. The chair of sociology sits at those meetings, and the last thing she said to me at the last meeting was, and I'm going to ask her about this because she's real bright. She said something like, actually campus is made up of conservative progressives, and that's the problem. And I don't know what she's talking about. I really don't. But I'm gonna pick her brain on that.
Oh, I think that's worth,
you know,
that's a rabbit hole worth jumping down, Diane.
Yeah, I think that might help explain some things. I'll have to see about that, and I'll report back if there's any anything to report back on. I'll report back on Hollander at some point. I'm real excited about his visit, and so we'll see what happens.
Well, I'm going to do a little homework and do a little reading myself. You've inspired me, Diane.
Well, yeah, with your lawyer's mind, you'll see things about the benefit corporation that I probably just skimmed over.
I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio. But
well, you've got that JD. My
yeah,
God,
that's a 3-year-long cup of coffee and a couple of glasses
no,
of beer.
No, I don't know. I don't think so. I think a JD is worth having. There's oftentimes I wish I had one because I get into certain matters of law. I have to get on the phone and call my alums, some alum, you know, some former graduates are now at law firms and pick their brains. I admire people who have a JD. That's not easily obtained. So, well, I'm going to get what I've been boiling.
I was
going
to say we've been on long enough that dinner ought to be boiled by now.
Yeah.
I'm
well,
sorry.
I just
love that. I do. Brent, yeah.
Well, I have a.
But you
I
successfully
walk around when I'm
you
on the phone.
Yeah, you successfully boiled dinner on your new stove, which did not at any part of the process explode. No, this is a net gain. This is win-win.
And I got a phrase bestowed on me by Carol.
Marvelously coherent.
Oh, Carol, thank you. And, you know, it takes one to know one, Carol, because, you know, that interview you did with Carol when she got back from Ferguson blew me away. Wow.
It blew all of us away,
Oh,
Diane.
My God. High praise from someone who knows what she's doing. That's what I can say. Thank you, Carol. And, Bob, you have a good night. Thanks for the conversation.
Oh, thank you, Diane. It is always a pleasure and always a joy.
It's
and
fun,
you have
isn't
a, it? It is a blast. You have a wonderful evening.
A blast. I love that. Okay, Bob. Thank you.
All right. Bye now, Diane.
Good night.
Good night. Diane from Kansas, Stan. And I do love our conversations. I love all of our conversations. This is about as far from being commercial radio as a human being can get and still be radio. And we're almost out of time, so I'm not going to run off down this road, but can you imagine this happening in any kind of format that requires stopping either for computer mandated hard breaks or, you know, stopping to sell toilet paper that was manufactured by the Koch brothers, because I can't. And so thank you one and all for keeping all of this going, for getting us over a crisis. I can't thank you enough. I just can't. Thank you to Gary Laborman, and thank you to Chris, and thank you to Sal, and thank you to Ed. All of you, thank you for moving things along. We're gonna reach the goal of that fund to bring differently abled telephone accessibility back to the horn. I sincerely believe it. And we're about, you know, $250, $300 away. It can be done. Y'all have a wonderful evening. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. There will be some mountaintop removal news pretty soon, I think. I think you'll be fascinated by it. And, yes, always, Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.